of Ways and Means and Natural Resources Subcommittee. This is Thursday, May 12, 2005, and we're here to continue the public hearing on House Bill 5029, which is the budget bill for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I'll open the public hearing on House Bill 5029, and committee members, just some comments. We are abysmally behind our schedule on this budget, and today is the last day that we have scheduled for it. So I would ask you, the first part of the meeting today will be the conclusion of the agency's presentation. If it would be possible for you to ask your questions in the process, but in the interest of saving time, if the agency could come and give you the answers to those questions in your office or by email or by some other way, I think that would help us to move the proceedings along. And also, in the public testimony phase of the hearing today, we will only be taking public testimony on House Bill 5029. That's all that we've posted to receive testimony on. So we can accept written testimony on any other bills, but we can't allow people to give us verbal testimony on them. That means that things like wolf issues that are not part of the budget can't be part of the public testimony today. But there will be a point in time when those bills will come before Natural Resources Committee and those discussions can be had. So with that, would the agency please come forward and conclude the budget presentation for us?
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, my name is Lindsay Ball. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We concluded yesterday with Ed Bowles. He has a little bit of presentation to give yet, but I do want to mention that a question came up on staffing levels in the department from yesterday. We did a quick check this morning, and there have been 134 positions cut from the agency since 2001, but that's not all the story, because the rest of the story is that there have been some other programs that have been added into the agency after those cuts that have balanced that out. We will get that information in form to Mr. Siebert here probably next week, so you can see what was cut and then also what was added into the budget later on, so that you have the complete information. With that, I'll introduce Ed Bowles, and we'll get started.
Mr. Bowles.
Thank you, Chair Morgan and members of the subcommittee. My name is Ed Bowles. I'm the Fish Division Administrator for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And as you recall, yesterday we were in the process of going through the Fish Division overview, and I was going through the program elements of that. And so I was in the middle of the natural production program going through some of the screening and passage projects that we've got. I'd like to shift now to the STEP program, and perhaps I'll circle back to one of the screening and passage projects once Representative Krupp, if he returns, I'd like to mention. But as far as the STEP program, this is a very important program to the agency. Yes, I'll reference it. It's page 38 that we're tracking along in the smaller Ways and Means document. STEP is a volunteer-based effort that you're well aware of. It's designed to help us manage and recover our fisheries. It was begun in the early 1980s. Its focus is on education, inventory of populations, as well as habitat and production elements of this. Now, in 2004, I just want to give you some examples of the tremendous support that we get through these STEP volunteers, because it is a volunteer-based program. Over 11,000 volunteers in 2004 basically contributed nearly 120,000 hours of volunteer support. That was for over 1,200 projects that they assisted in. And if you equate this to basic manpower, it equates to about $2 million and 56 FTEs for the agency. So I can't stress enough the importance of this legion of volunteers to help us. Next topic I'd like to shift to is just mention the Oregon Plan, which is a very high priority for this agency. When Director Ball first came on, this was one of his primary mandates to staff, and I feel the agency has responded very well in asserting this leadership in the Oregon Plan. I'm going to talk a little bit more later about some of these things, but I just want to talk about briefly the native fish conservation policy is a key benchmark on this. The hatchery fish management policy, the fish health policy, as well as the coastal coho assessment that we're doing now, recovery planning efforts, a tremendous statewide program of monitoring and evaluation the status of the fish in their watersheds, providing landowner technical support, as well as very close work on some of the very important hydro relicensing projects. And so all this plays out into the Oregon plan. Shift now to the Marine Resources Program. This helps protect and manage Oregon's marine fish and the shellfish. There are four primary sub-programs. We've got groundfish, the shellfish program, ocean salmon, and then the basic operations of that program. It conducts research, does stock assessments, which are very vital to those fisheries. We do the fisheries monitoring itself and the management. Now, this is both sport and commercial, and it relates to not just state jurisdiction sort of issues. Just about everything we manage has got some element of multiple states and federal and state jurisdictions, some of it international jurisdictions on this. And so this program is very immersed in these interjurisdictional fisheries issues. It's headquartered in Newport, and they have offices in Astoria, Tillamook, Charleston, and Brookings. And I think this is very important in keeping this program closely connected to the constituents and the fleets. Last program I'd like to talk about is the Interjurisdictional Fisheries Program. This includes our Columbia River Ocean Salmon Program, as well as the Fish Division and Regional Operations. It assesses the status of salmon, steelhead, sturgeon, and smelt in the Columbia River, as well as the ocean and our coastal population. So that's its focus. And like the Marine Program, it is really immersed in these interjurisdictional, multi-state, federal, as well as international compacts. And so it's a very complicated management scenario for those. A couple of key issues I'd like to talk about that go beyond just the programs, and I spoke to these just briefly, but I'm going to talk again about the Hatchery Research Center that we brought up yesterday. And this is very appropriate right now because we're just finishing up with the construction of that facility. It's, I think, a tremendous example of both the agency as well as the legislature and the state's support and leadership in moving the state forward on a key front of research regarding hatchery-wildfish interactions, regarding how best to have responsible use of our hatcheries, not only in the utilization of the fish, but also in their conservation. And it's a state-of-the-art facility. Some of you have had the pleasure of touring it as it's being constructed. It's coming along each week, something new showing up, and it is on schedule and on budget. And I'd like to invite all of you to attend the open house for that on July 28th. So hopefully you can join us for that celebration. Fish recovery, something that's very much on people's minds throughout the state. Moving on, fish recovery, which is very important to people throughout the state for numerous reasons, is something that our agency has really stepped up and is providing leadership on. And what our focus is to try to help move the region beyond the gridlock towards actually delisting fish and moving beyond the need to list fish in the future. So that's really been a focus of ours. A lot of that has been on bringing our technical expertise to bear on these tough challenges of helping describe and define viability. And for that, a couple key things of note. One is the legislature's clear direction on a definition of recovery that was very helpful in the progress that we've been able to make over the past 2 years that came out of last session. Also, our native fish conservation policy has helped drive this forward. And so we're making very good progress. The coastal coho assessment, which included an element of it, to help NOAA Fisheries make a final determination on whether or not they should be listed. That is just going out from the governor's office this week, and it'll go into NOAA Fisheries for their consideration. And very pleased with the technical work that many different state agencies contributed in pulling that together, and it's quite unprecedented, even nationally. Other efforts that we have, Mid-Columbia River Steelhead is one of the areas that we want to move to next to take a good look at their status and describe what's needed to move them potentially off the list. Lower Columbia River Coho, Interior Red Band Trout, Rogue Spring Chinook, which aren't listed, but we want to keep from being listed. Lower Columbia River and Willamette Salmon and Steelhead, and the Snake River Salmon and Steelhead are all areas of focus that we are currently working on, what will be getting much more attention over the coming months. Last topic I'd like to talk about is Diamond Lake. And I know, Chair Morgan, this is something that you've been working on for a long time. It is a legacy for all Oregonians and what they remember it once was and could be again. And so this has been a long and difficult journey. But I think progress is really on the horizon. We're going to get there. And I just wanted to give you the schedule as of now. We don't spend a lot of time on it. But the drawdown is planned for next September. And then a year later, in September of 06, will be the treatment of the lake. And then restocking in the spring of 07. All right. And most of the legal hurdles have been crossed. And it's... I won't say clear sailing, but it's looking very encouraging right now. So,
this was also a tremendous effort on the part of federal agencies and state agencies, and Douglas County had a big role in the process, too. It was about a 3 or 4 year process to get to an EIS with a preferred alternative and a record of decision from the Forest Service, who's the lead agency on it. And the process was appealed, but the record of decision was upheld. And so now we're proceeding with implementing the preferred alternative. Cinder Shields.
Believe it or not, I used to live not far from there and used to love the lake. The question is, we do this again, it's going to cost money. I appreciate it. I want to do it. Is there any way we can try to mitigate against it happening all over again?
There is a significant piece of the plan that involves public education and monitoring to try to prevent us from having to go down this road again.
Madam Chair, how effective was it? We did it in the 1950s, had the same problem, but it lasted for 40 years. How successful was that program? Was it, the same problem occurred, I understand. Two chubs got there, somebody dropped them in, took a few years to build up. But somehow, in the ensuing 40, 45 years, it worked well. What changed? Was this just one episode of somebody dropping those in changed everything, or is it something that was different in the climate at the time? Why'd we go 45 years on a problem that all of a sudden we had one? Do you have any knowledge of what happened there?
Chair Morgan and Senator Bates, as well as Senator Shields, we all know that we're investing a lot of money in this and want it to be successful, and I wish we could guarantee that once we do this, it'll never happen again. I think Chair Morgan hit it on the head where this has to be coupled with not, okay, we do this and then we forget about it. This has to be coupled with aggressive outreach, letting folks know the consequences of this, very good enforcement of existing law relative to movement of fish, not only here but in other water bodies throughout the state. There is right now a much more elevated education on this because of invasive aquatic species, not just the tui chub in this case, but this would be other ones that I think the public is starting to understand. We're working closely with the Pacific States Marine Fishery Commission, as well as Portland State University and Mark Sitzma's program, to build a very clear and compelling education program, because this is one, if people understand the consequences, I think most people will help us be successful with it. There's also opportunities to strengthen some of the laws associated with this, but once again, that's a legislative issue. More But primarily, this is one of helping people understand the consequences of their actions. If something like this, I mean, but if the fish go back in, then we play it out again. I mean, that's the nature of this. And we will be watching it as carefully as we can, but there's nothing we can do once they're back in there, short of, once again, having this go through this process.
I mean, I'm fully supportive, don't get me wrong. We want this to happen. In our area, it's one of the major tourist attractions for the Medford area. Even though it's not in my district, it's, you know, in yours, but it's one of the major attractions. Great place to be, and I just hate to see it having been lost. I hate to see it happen again.
It's actually Senator Prozonsky's.
Oh, that's right. They've
Representative
changed
Hannon's
things. I'm sorry.
Districts. But it is part, I think, as Mr. Bowles has said, you don't have to go very far in the state of Oregon before you run into people who have stories to tell about Diamond Lake and how they grew up there and learned to fish and camp there. And getting the lake back to a place where it can fulfill that role in people's vacation and leisure time activities, and just the role that it has in binding families together and being part of the culture, is that's what motivates me to continue to work with the program. And we spent a lot of work on what we could do to try to prevent a reinfestation of the chub, and so there'll be a significant effort to give information to people that come and stay in the campsites and use the lodge and the fishing facilities up there, to have brochures and handouts available to them and make sure that there's signage around the lake so people know what's going on, make places available for people to wash their boats and things like that to try to avoid contamination. It's you're right on, Senator. This is an incredibly expensive and time-consuming process, and I think there's a huge desire to forestall it from having to be done again.
Yeah.
Just one. I don't want to take too much time up here, but there must have been a discussion about things like using hybrid bass to help control the population of chub, in addition to what you're doing. And I assume that was not a viable alternative. Really, hybrid sterile fish have been used. The predators have been used, but they also impact the trout fishery too when you do that. So I'm not sure it's an answer. Yeah.
Chair Morgan and Senator Bates, all those alternatives were looked at through the EIS process, and some of them had potential, but this by far is the most likely solution, and right now we're very pleased that this alternative was the one chosen to move forward with.
I'm sure you vetted everything. That's the best choices you can make.
We can give you more information about what works and what doesn't work with Tui Chub than you would ever want.
It would be fun to see, but I don't want to take time up here.
Senator Shields.
No, before the Fish Division finishes, I had one more question. It's not
okay.
On this subject.
Let's proceed, Mr. Bowles.
I'm very close to done, Chair Morgan, and just wanted to circle back around with Representative Krupp here just to mention about one of our irrigation screening and passage program projects that we're very proud of, and this is in the North Santiam, the Santiam Water Control District, and the manager there is Larry Trocy, and you probably know him. He's very excited about this project, and this is one that is over 1,000 cubic feet per second. It's one of the five largest diversions in the state, in fact. And this is a very collaborative, cooperative project, lots of funding sources as well as very local involvement in the representative's district to get this job done. And this is tremendously important, and it was completed last September. And so this spring is really, you know, what happens is these fish coming down the Santiam are used to be diverted and had substantial losses. And so working collectively, we got this done. And in fact, Larry, this spring observed what he estimated over 100,000 smolts right ahead out to the ocean, right in the area of the diversion, milling around there, couldn't get down the diversion, went out through the bypass pipe and on their way to the ocean. And so we're already a phenomenal success, and we're just very pleased to bring that up.
Finding Nemo, huh?
You weren't there. I missed the whole thing. It would have been a turkey shoot. You guys didn't tell me.
Senator Shields, please elevate the discussion.
Bring it back down again, Senator. Is that it? Okay.
Back to reality.
Yeah. I have a question. I know that this, I guess it's a fish division. Something that I've been interested in, and I know we had a bill that went through environment and land use on the Senate side, is the fish division the one that deals with the issue of aquaculture? I know that I sound like a Republican, and I'm sure Representative Krupp would be glad to hear that. I've gotten to the point.
Call 911.
Well, if in fact we can. I just gave Representative Dingfelder a heart attack. If I sound like a Republican.
Yeah.
let me make my question clear. If in fact,
wait, he's certainly having so far.
This group's hopeless. That's all
I think. Too much time with Richard Devlin. Jeez.
If in fact we had a bill back in 1999 that said you were going to use like 10% of, I think it was fish division budget or some budget, it's some subcategory, to do aquaculture. And if, in fact, information I've got is that you never quite got there, I'd like some more details on that. Okay? If, in fact, in certain cases you can meet some of your goals by using private enterprise, that's the Republican part, why haven't we moved forward at the capacity that was stated in the 1999 bill?
Senator, in the interest of time, yeah, would it satisfy you to have these gentlemen visit you at your convenience?
It's fine. I just wanted the question on the record. I understand the method you're using. All of our questions will kind of be answered by them one-on-one. But I don't think I'm the only one in the committee that's interested in
that. No, Madam Chair, I would echo. I frankly would ask that you give us a moment to have a response on that.
Okay.
I think it's an important question. I'd like to have an answer.
I'd support that, too.
Thank you.
Mr. Bowles, go for it.
Yes. Chair Morgan and Senator Shields, Representative Krupp, as well as Senator Bates. On this issue, as I understand the question, was we had a bill that went through on 10% of the amount of money we spend on trout to be dedicated towards private aquaculture in a pilot program to see, test the quality of the product, how well it's delivered, satisfaction, things like that. And that pilot project was designed to sunset in after 2006. So in that, there was, if I think I'm getting at your question correctly, there was quite a bit of debate and discussion over just what 10% means. And where it landed in, as I understand it, the Ways and Means direction, which went forward with establishing the recommendations to the legislature regarding our budget, was they resolved that somewhat of a dispute through a budget note that identified just under $280,000 for us to be spending on this private aquaculture pilot study during that period. And as far as I am aware, we have followed that direction.
My follow-up question, there's also a debate about what the cost of producing a fish out of the state-run hatcheries versus other private hatcheries, and that was also something that was not resolved. There were debate and questions about what the true costs were on both sides. And I'd like to have some information from your point on that, not necessarily today, but at a later time. I'd like to see your figures for this, and I'd like to see their figures for it.
Chair Morgan and Senator Bates, this has been an ongoing discussion for several biennium. Part of the reason it's hard to lock in on a number is that we do not have several of our hatcheries, in fact, most of them, don't exclusively rear trout. They do trout on the side with a focus program on salmon and steelhead. And so what you have is basically the infrastructure built around salmon and steelhead, and then trout being done as well. And that those programs ebb and flow based on returns as well as the programs that are supporting those. And so you want to make sure that it's apples to apples when we're making these comparisons. We do have that analysis, and we'd be happy to share those with you.
Mr. Bowles, talk to us about what happens when a large percentage or at what percentage of trout production being taken out of the hatchery system, what the implication is for the system as a whole, the hatchery system.
Chair Morgan, because we do a lot of these production dynamics, doing multiple duties, salmon, steelhead, trout, and others, if we were to just remove the component from the budget, so to say, then you would end up putting other programs at risk, the salmon and steelhead programs. And so there has to be a careful balance to ensure that you haven't reduced the funds going in that are also paying for salmon and steelhead production to a point that you end up putting those programs at risk, which I don't think is anybody's intent on all sides of this issue.
So is it reasonable to say that the trout production is kind of a balancer in the hatchery system that allows the facilities to be used efficiently and with sufficient volume to keep the crews busy all on a steady basis?
Chair Morgan, that's correct. It is a way to optimize our hatcheries, make sure the water and space is put to good use. But is also specific to certain areas that are good for growing trout. We don't do that everywhere, but it's in those areas that also fit the needs of growing trout and are close to distribution centers of where we need to put those fish to reduce our distribution costs.
Study the numbers very carefully. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And following up on that, and I mentioned it to Representative Krupa, we have competing numbers as to who gets the job done less expensively. And I'm not sure that I'm comfortable with either side giving me their numbers. I'd like an objective third party to take a look at this, and I don't know who that is or how you would get at it.
Audits.
Well, we're talking about an audit of some sort, I suppose, but, you know.
It may be an interesting budget note discussion around this.
We don't, but I would reiterate, we don't want to put any of the hatcheries at risk of closure. That's not the purpose here. Okay.
And
Madam Chair, since we're talking about hatcheries,
yes,
I think we need to mention the tribal folks, at least in my part of the country. I mean, the Umatillas have done a great job with their hatchery program out there. I know you folks have helped them. I've been out there when they load the fish together, both your department and the tribes. But I still get the sense somehow as they feel that the department thinks that they're inferior with their hatchery program, and yet it's very successful. Maybe that's the third party.
Yeah.
I mean, they concentrate on salmon, I think, basically, is where they're at. But they restore the runs of the Umatilla. They're restoring the runs with the help of a lot of other agencies in the Walla. So, I mean, I just think that the department has to be flexible on this thing and try and get these hatcheries so they actually work. The tribals use what they call gravel to gravel in their hatchery. They do their rearing way up in the things. Are you doing the concrete stuff where the concrete ponds are there? How do you go about that?
Chair Morgan and Senator Nelson, this is one of the this issue of how best to reform hatcheries to really be able to respond to the needs of today, which is not just providing fish for harvest, but also for conservation uses, is very ripe and is one of the reasons why we as a state, you as a legislature, made a tremendous commitment in funding the Hatchery Research Center, which is really investigating these very things. There is no other hatchery anywhere in the area that comes as close to gravel to gravel as what this Hatchery Research Center's got, because four of the raceways are designed as actual streams. And we'll be pursuing the sort of investigations that help us understand just what is that balance between human intervention and just letting them spawn in the creek where we still get the survival benefits that we need out of hatcheries. We are very much partners with the tribes, particularly the Umatilla tribes, the Warm Springs tribes in Oregon, on this front of conservation hatcheries, figuring out how best to use our hatcheries in a way that provides a safety net to the wild fish out there in the watersheds. And we are very supportive. The districts going out of the LeGrand office, which is our regional center there, the districts are working hand in hand with the tribes on management plans and hatchery plans related to the conservation of spring chinook as well as steelhead in that region of the state. And we have very close communications. We do a lot of this through a forum called the United States versus Oregon, which is a legally driven forum, court-ordered, and I feel very comfortable with that relationship with those tribes.
At least the Umatillas really consider their hatchery fish as wild fish. I don't think they clip the fins, do they? I think that's one of the issues.
Chair Morgan and Senator Nelson, they do clip some of their fins for evaluation purposes and as part of agreements within USB Oregon. Their preference is to not clip their fins. One of the reasons, several reasons. One is they don't like imposing that potential harm on the fish. Another one is they don't necessarily care for non-tribal folks having a harvest opportunity on those before they come home.
Proceed.
Chair Morgan, that is all I had for you today. I just wanted to close with a comment that I personally am very optimistic about the future of fishing and the fish in Oregon. I think Fish Division and the agency will continue to exert strong leadership in moving the state forward on some of these recovery issues, and it's a very exciting time to be a part of it.
Chair Morgan, our next presenter will be Ron Anglin from our Wildlife Division.
Good afternoon, Chair Morgan, members of the committee. For the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. My discussions today will center on the division that's starting on page 51 of your smaller Ways and Means document. The Wildlife Division is comprised of approximately 213 FTEs spread throughout three programs within the agency: the Game Program, Habitat Program, and Diversity Program. Our operations are centered between headquarters and field staff, where we work on a majority of our projects in headquarters as program development, project development, planning, technical advice to the field, and public outreach, whereas our field staff are implementation of those policies and programs, assisting headquarters with planning efforts, and also working with public outreach. The game and habitat programs are the two primary sub-programs within the Wildlife Division. They're primarily funded through license fees and federal dollars. This is where our major outreach efforts with the public are centered and where we conduct the bulk of our activities. Some of the highlights within these two program structures center around all the inventory work that we do, which is where we end up determining population numbers for big game, waterfowl, upland birds, setting hunting seasons, and dealing with some of the different species plans that we need to develop, and where we take a leadership role in wildlife management for the state. I think that something I'd like to highlight, Director Ball mentioned yesterday how the department views itself as the managers of fish and wildlife within Oregon, and mentioned several things that we do or had done relative to sage grouse and other species. Another highlight that the director did not mention yesterday is with mountain quail. Oregon has been viewed in the West as one of the leaders in mountain quail restoration in the eastern portion of the state, building on efforts on capturing quail out of southwestern Oregon and relocating those to suitable habitat in eastern Oregon with radio transmitters. We have determined that it is possible to reestablish mountain quail to historic habitats. in eastern Oregon, and in fact, that's been touted as a model for other states in the West to be following, and specifically Washington and Idaho to follow our example by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And it's been real critical to them because they've been pressured to list mountain quail in the eastern portion of these states. And based on the leadership of Oregon, that they have decided at this point in time, if the other states follow suit, that they're not moving forward with listing proposals. And in fact, this winter we did capture 150 mountain quail and turned those over to Washington and Idaho for a joint release on their borders. So we are taking some very progressive efforts to try and reestablish these birds, and it's through the use of some of the dedicated and obligated funds that come out of the Upland Bird Stamp Program. We also have instituted for the first time ever a wildlife veterinarian within the game management program. Oregon, up until this biennium, was the only state in the West that did not have a veterinarian. That person has been instrumental in working with the Oregon Department of Agriculture on statewide disease transmission plans involving livestock and potentially wildlife, how to implement those programs to protect all of Oregonians' interests, working on West Nile virus and serving on the statewide committee on actions that can be taken with West Nile and ways to protect both wildlife and to look out for human health. Helping us in developing better disease testing protocols for our trap and transplant programs, and being a driving force in looking at some of our relocation policies. Our habitat program, which implements several things that are direct tie to the game management program, is highlighted by our wildlife management areas. These are located throughout the state. They're designed to either protect or restore wetland habitat or winter range habitat for game animals, game birds. In a lot of cases, they serve as a primary stopping place or attractant to hold those wildlife on our wildlife areas instead of having them move down onto private lands and causing damage. A prime example of that is the Elkhorn Wildlife Area over in Baker City, where the feed sites that we have around the valley associated with our wildlife area hold deer and elk up off the valley floor and really minimize the damage that normally would occur from those animals. Also, the Klamath Wildlife Area down in the Klamath Falls area, which does the same thing with geese and attracts and holds geese for a longer period of time on state lands instead of on adjacent private lands. The wildlife areas also serve as a prime attractant to a lot of visitor use. As the director mentioned yesterday, we get between 1.8 and 2 million visitor visits per year on our wildlife areas. A lot of that use is by people who are not hunting or fishing. They're there to view wildlife. There are major and significant tours now being operated that include our Summer Lake and Klamath Wildlife Areas on a tour loop from Bend, from the Portland metropolitan area, to visit those two wildlife areas specifically and tie them in with the Warner Wetlands over out of Heart Mountain and Paisley and the Lower Klamath Wildlife Refuges as part of the federal system on the border. The final program that we have is the Wildlife Diversity Program. This is the smallest program within the agency, but it also has the most wildlife species that need to be dealt with. 88% of the fish and wildlife within the state are not hunted or fished and fall within the Wildlife Diversity Program, and yet it receives the least amount of funding by the state to implement programs. Within
her base, did you have a question?
Just a question. I don't want to interrupt your train of thought, but after a conversation a couple of days ago about people viewing wildlife in the state, and we had a continued conversation about fishing licenses and hunting licenses slowly declining, I asked various people that I know, especially in the Portland area, if that's really a big deal, and I'm finding out it is a big deal. When you just mentioned it again, do you have any idea of that over a million people who are visiting these areas, how many of them are actually there to view wildlife or do birding? Do you have any idea what those numbers are?
Chair Krieger, Senator Bates, maybe I can help you with that. We have conducted a survey at E.E. Wilson, our wildlife area down near Corvallis. 75% of the people that go to that wildlife area do not have a hunting or angling license. 25% do. So you've got a 75-25% split at E. Wilson, which is not in a which is not near a major metropolitan area. Where you look at someone like someplace like Sauvie Island, you may see that figure is quite a bit different. Where you have a wildlife area next to a large metropolitan area, you may attract a lot more people for wildlife viewing than hunting or fishing. That gives you an idea of some of the use and the people who participate.
The point it brings to my mind is the great deal of the wildlife we have in the state and the fisheries we have in the state are the result of licensing and the money that licensing has been spent on. And so for people who might feel averse to people who hunt or fish, they should remember that what they're seeing to a great degree is a result of those licenses or the works of Ducks Unlimited or Trout Unlimited. I think it needs to be pointed out. I'd love to see more numbers on that. I didn't realize that there was that big a number of people like to go out and look at wildlife. Not everybody goes out to hunt and fish, and it looks like maybe it's actually tipping in the other direction now. Another change of society. So I'd like to have some numbers next time around if you can gather some more like you have already in Corvallis.
Chair Krieger, Senator Bates, I think it also begs the question as well, who and how do we fund the future of fish and wildlife management? And that's been an issue that I think you're going to see become more of a priority of discussion in this state. Because the person who hunts and fish is the person who provides the bulk of the funding source and has for years.
Point taken. Thank you.
The other main portion of the Wildlife Diversity Program is actually a new program that was added this biennium, and that's the State Wildlife Grants. Those are federal dollars that have flowed into the agency as part of a national effort to develop conservation strategies to address species of special concern and habitats of special concern in each one of the states. And the ultimate goal is that each of the states participating in the program will identify those key species and habitats where voluntary actions can be taken by private landowners and public landowners to protect and conserve those species and to prevent a federal listing. Virtually every state is participating within the program. We will have our plan completed by late summer and submitted to the Fish and Wildlife Service for formal approval by October. That's undergone a very involved process with outside organizations assisting us in developing the plan with technical review, and we've had excellent input from those folks, and we feel we have a very strong plan that will be of benefit to Oregon. With that, Chair Krieger, I'd like to conclude my presentation and be willing to answer any questions that you might have.
Other questions, committee? Thank you.
Chair Krieger, our next presenter will be Chris Couts to cover a policy option package, point of sale, and deferred maintenance.
Good afternoon, Chair Krieger, members of the committee. For the record, I am Chris Couts, the Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I have two quick items to discuss with you that currently aren't in the governor's recommended budget, but will be coming up during the 05-07 biennium and will probably be part of the development of the 07-09 budget. The first is our point-of-sale licensing system. That is currently how we distribute licenses and tags. People come in to a point-of-sale agent, such as a Bi-Mart or their local sportsman shop, and purchase those. That system is currently 8 years old. It is based on COBOL programming, which you can't find many COBOL programmers anymore. The hardware that is actually out at the point of sale agents is 8 years old. We can't replace it because it is hard coded into the system, so we have to keep refurbishing what we have. And technology has come a long way in the last 8 years. And so right now we have a request for a proposal out on the street to have vendors come in and present proposals to us about replacement of the system. We should have those at the end of June. My expectation would be we'd come back during the interim and talk to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology, as well as the Emergency Board, about those requests, what the funding and the nature of those might be. So I wanted to get that out there, as well as the department has an ongoing deferred maintenance issue due to the number of facilities that it has around the state, hatcheries, wildlife management areas, and our region and district offices. Over time, we have looked at deferred maintenance issues. We have figures that range, but those have all been developed by staff. We have never had an outside entity come in with architectural and engineering background to take a look at our facilities, take a look at the code issues we have, public access issues that we have, ADA compliance issues that we have, and help us prioritize those so we can come back to you and talk about what those issues are, what the funding might be for those in the future, so that we can maintain those facilities for fish production, wildlife viewing, and the like.
Spending average now by name on maintenance throughout the whole agency. Do you have a budget that does that?
Chair Krieger, we have $200,000 roughly in general fund that we spend for emergency hatchery repair that comes up during the course of a biennium, water breaks in the lines, that type of thing. And then I'll look real quickly here. Then we only have about $400,000 to $450,000 that we do deferred maintenance upkeep at those facilities over the course of a biennium.
I might add, Chair Krieger, we're just now becoming getting to the point in the administration of this agency after the budget issues that we've had 4 years ago to be able to function in our maintenance plan in a business manner, very similar to what you would see in other facility-owning entities like other agencies in state government, private business, etc. Put things on a plan, on a schedule, so that we can adequately maintain those facilities. That's where we are today, and that's the reason for the plan.
Any other questions?
I think that's it.
Okay. The last item that I'd like to go over today are the policy option packages for the agency. In the Ways and Means presentation document, if you turn to page 30, there is a graphic there that talks about what those policy option packages are for the agency. I'd like to walk through those real quickly. The first line that you see on page 30, those were analyst adjustments made during the development of the governor's recommended budget. They reflect reductions for the Smart Buy program.
Excuse me. Just a second. Yeah. Which page 30 behind what tab?
Behind the agency summary tab.
Okay.
Okay.
Good.
So starting with the analyst adjustments, we have adjustments for the Oregon Smart Buy, the 10% general fund reductions that were taken, as well as fund shifts program from general fund and lottery funds onto Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Funds. The next policy option package that the agency put forward was for the operational needs to get the Hatchery Research Center off the ground. Three new positions, of course, the construction this biennium, the need to operate next biennium and into the future. We have the Western Oregon Stream Restoration Project. Many of you are familiar with that. That's been an ongoing program since about 1995. We have staff on the west side of the state that provide technical assistance to landowners and watershed councils in developing projects for on the ground. That has lottery funds for that program in the 2005-2007 biennium. The next one is coastal monitoring. That's complementary to a lot of work that the Fish Division is doing right now in gaining that data that they need to look at the assessment of the stocks and where they're at. This is a program that we've had over the last couple of biennium and, again, is continued with limited duration positions and lottery funding. The next policy option package we have is a conversion of a number of limited duration positions to permanent and seasonal positions within the agency. We have 138 positions that were limited duration in the current biennium that are basically on federal fund and other fund contracts that we'd like to convert to permanent and seasonal positions because those contracts have been around, generally speaking, for 5 or more years. So it's been an ongoing program. The next policy option package is modification and management of positions. This is where we have things like a federal contract that allows the funding for a seasonal position 4 months each biennium, but right now in our system we only have, it would allow 4 months like each year. So each fish stocking season we'd only have 4 months, and we really need 8 months total in a biennium. This would add those types of months to those positions. There are upgrades to positions to comply with the duties and responsibilities that they're performing, and we do have a couple of new positions. One, a payroll technician, due to the volume of payroll staff that we have and the payroll issues we have, and office support for the fish division. The next package are settlement agreements for fish mitigation. We work with those that operate hydroelectric facilities on various rivers and streams. In this case, we have two projects, one on the North Umpqua and one on the Deschutes River at Pelton Round Butte, where those that are being licensed, Pacific Corps on North Umpqua and PGE on the Deschutes, require fish mitigation as part of their relicensing. They are providing the funding for us to do the mitigation work here. And then the last policy option package is dedicated and obligated expenditure authority. This is where we have developed a balance for some of the programs based on tag sales and that type of thing for antelopes, turkeys, mountain goats, and halibut, where we'd like the ability now to have the expenditure authority to operate surveys and do research.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Chair Krieger. Sure. Chair Krieger and Representative Dingfelder, those are from licensed dollars, so they would be from angling license and tag sales.
Thank you.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, that concludes the presentation by the Department of Fish and Wildlife today.
Okay, any other further questions, committee, of the director? Thank you very much, Mr. Ball. I guess we're ready for public testimony, Mr. Siebert. I'm going to go right down the list that we've got here. Al Elkins. And why don't we have Rod Moore come up at the same time? I'll have you up there two at a time.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. I won't go through in detail my testimony, Mr. Chair. I will summarize, though, because I know time is of essence here. Our two top priorities for the budget is to maintain the ODFW current level of biologists and to maintain the stream of revenue that goes into the OSP game enforcement officers. We also, on the last page, the last three paragraphs, have a concern as members of the ODFW External Budget Committee. We would like to see the this committee at some time during the interim address the commercial wildlife related licenses. We saw that revenue from those licenses generated $1.5 million. Administrative costs for the program were about $2.4 million, and we think it's time to increase those fees. While not a popular concept, we understand. We do think some of these have not been adjusted since late 70s, early 80s, so we think that needs to be looked into. That concludes my testimony. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay. Hey. Any questions, Mr. Elkins?
Al, have you had any conversation with the agency regarding that issue you brought up on?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yes, we did, and it was decided that at this time we would not look into the raising of those fees during this legislative session, but we would look at them again during the interim as part of the process for the next budget cycle. That's my understanding.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rod, are you ready?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Rod Moore. I'm Executive Director of the West Coast Seafood Processors Association. We represent major seafood processors and a lot of small processors as well on the Oregon coast. I'm also a member of the Department's External Budget Advisory Committee, as was Al. Served together on that for a number of years. And I serve as an advisor of the Oregon section of the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission. In general, we support the budget that's been put forward to you for the department. I think that the governor and Director Ball have done a very good job in trying to balance out needs of the state and the agency and with the revenues that we have. And I've got to compliment Director Ball for working very closely with and his staff for working closely with our External Budget Advisory Committee and trying to develop this. So it's a very good process. It has been for several years. We really appreciate the outreach that he does on that. Having said all the good stuff, there's one minor problem that unfortunately has come up since the last time the External Budget Advisory Committee met, and that is that we've discovered that there's a significant shortfall in current services, which is not a fault of the state so much as it is a problem we have with the federal government. In that there are several programs that the state does through its marine programs. In fact, Ed Bowles described some of them earlier in terms of data analysis and sampling and that sort of thing, that are very important for maintaining both an economic fishery and to make sure we have sustainable fisheries that are environmentally viable. And the shortfall involves the fact that there's been level funding for a number of years through the grants received from the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission. And the department has been backfilling this with their own money, but over the course of time with level funding, what happens is that in real dollars, as your needs increase and your dollars stay, your current dollars stay the same, the real dollars get lower and lower. And we've gotten to the point where the agency can no longer backfill that money. So there are several very important areas that are going to be essentially terminated. And this is going to have an adverse effect on the sort of data and analysis that's done, which, while a lot of it benefits the commercial fisheries, actually hurts some of the sport fisheries as well, because the same species that are assessed in stock assessments and which the data is gathered through this process are species that sportsmen catch. And I know you all remember what happened last year, unfortunately, when the department had to close the sport fishery early. It hurt a lot of people. They had no choice. They were trying to use the best data they had. And if we're eroding the ability to get that data, things are going to get worse. So what we're suggesting, and I will add as well, that for the Pacific whiting fishery, which I know fishermen in your district, Mr. Krieger, participate in, the whiting fishery has for some time, along with paying into the commercial fish fund through state landing fees, also paid for some additional monitoring and data gathering and so forth. A portion of that has been paid for by the state through the Pacific State Marine Fisheries Commission grant. And that portion is no longer going to be paid for. So the whiting fishermen are winding up paying twice for services that other fishermen kind of get for free, or at most have to pay for once. That gets to be a little bit more difficult when you're dealing with, especially when dealing with a fish that has a large volume but a low market value. So what we're suggesting, the Commercial Fish Fund has a significant ending balance We're suggesting that for the next biennium, that $344,000 out of that ending balance be devoted simply to cover the shortfall in current services. It's not going to start any new programs. It's not going to create new personnel, new jobs, or anything like that. And in fact, we agree with Director Ball that that sort of thing would be inappropriate to do, because you do have to have a savings account for a rainy day, if you will. But at some point, when it's raining, you got to take some money out of the bank and buy a pair of boots. And we're at that point right now. And so that is what we're suggesting the committee consider as part of the budget. We're working with our congressional delegation to try to get that federal money restored and increased, but as you all know, that's a little bit of a gamble as well. We do have money that the fishing industry has paid into the commercial fish fund. This is not general fund dollars. It's not taxpayer dollars. This is coming from the commercial fishing industry. And that money is available, and we think a very small portion of it, less than 17% of the ending balance by my calculation, should be used to cover current services. And that's our proposal. And other than that, in general, again, we support the budget, and we appreciate the things that the department has been doing. Thank you.
Any members have any comments or questions?
I'm trying to follow this since I'm not. Basically, you're concerned because you do a lot of ground fishing. You need continued biological sampling analysis for ground fish stocks. Information is crucial in compiling good stock assessments. So you're saying right now this department doesn't have the money to do that.
What is happening, Senator, is that the department has, as I mentioned, been receiving a grant through the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission. That grant is eroding in value. The department has been backfilling it. The department doesn't have the money to backfill it anymore in this budget.
Okay, and then the money that you're intending to use then comes out of another fund, the commercial?
The Commercial Fish Fund, Senator, is a fund that was established by the legislature. It's funded by landing taxes on commercial fish landed in the state of Oregon. There are some other inputs to it as well, but that's where the bulk of it comes from. So it's coming out of the pockets of the fishermen and processors. And it goes into the Commercial Fish Fund. That helps support the department's budget, especially the Marine Programs Division.
How big is that fund?
We're looking right now.
Chris Kaus could answer the question better than me, but as I recall, at the EBAC meeting last year, the end of session balance was $1.3 million. I think it's grown. So, but this is the woman with the numbers, so you'll have to ask her.
3.1.
I guess pretty close to that.
I have another question, too. When do we get this information?
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, the ending balance we are projecting at the end of the 2005-2007 biennium would be about $1.6 million at this point in time.
Nelson, do you have another question?
It's not a question. Then you have an issue about a double taxation problem. So you feel like you're paying twice then?
What happens, Senator, is that every fisherman who lands Pacific whiting in the state, which is a fairly significant fishery during the summer, pays the state landing tax, just like every other commercial fisherman, whether you're a crab fisherman or whatever. In addition, because of the nature of the whiting fishery, desires to make sure that there's no bycatch of endangered species of salmon, a whole lot of stuff, there are additional monitoring programs that go on to make sure that fishermen are catching what they're supposed to catch, that it's being checked at the processing plant, so forth. All of this sort of thing. The industry has paid for those costs during the course of the whiting season over a number of years. The state, through its Pacific States grant, has paid for off-season activities, which are mostly research, data analysis, this sort of thing, support of the Pacific Fishery Management Council. That portion, the off-season portion, if you will, can no longer be paid for by the state under the current budget. And the state has come to us in the industry and said, well, if you want to see this data analysis and so forth, keep going. You're going to have to pay for it. And, you know, if it comes to that, excuse me, we'll have to, because it's our livelihood. But it does create a sort of double taxation situation, because we're paying for the landing taxes as well. That money's going into the commercial fish fund, and you have a end of session balance.
You're suggesting that we just use this on a temporary basis for this biennium, or how do we solve the problem long term?
I'm hoping in the long term that we can get that federal grant stabilized, and that's certainly what we're trying to do. But for the time being, you know, we have a situation where there's no guarantees on that, where current services are eroding, and where we have the money in Oregon that's coming out of our own pockets. And so we're suggesting let's use some of that savings account to buy that pair of boots.
Can we ask Alice or department? Is this a feasible idea? Well, why don't we pose the question to him, let him get back to you in writing, because we have to get through a lot of public testimony. Okay. That's all right.
Okay. Let me ask one last question. How do you think the commercial fishermen feel about possibly this money being diverted to you? Is this a high priority for them as it is for you? I mean, the funds are coming from commercial fishermen.
Yes, sir. The money.
In looking at what the fund's supposed to do, it appears this would be an appropriate use for it.
Yes, sir.
How do the commercial fishermen, do you think, feel about diverting the fund, using it for that?
Well, at least the commercial fishermen that I've talked to, it's not going to me. It's going to the department.
No, I understand.
Yeah. The fishermen that I've talked to are quite concerned about the fact that we are going to be eroding services. And the ones I've talked to said, yeah, we need to, that's what we're paying the money for, is for these current services.
Have you shared this idea with the department itself?
I have, yes.
What was the reaction?
I would let Director Ball answer for himself on that. We've had discussions on it.
Good answer. He's going politics. Good answer.
Anything else for Mr. Moore? Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Maybe you can answer the question, Mr. Ball, for the letter or phone call or one of your early walks through the building in the morning. Glenn Stonebrink, I'm going to bring you up alone. I got a couple doubles coming up.
Chair Krieger and members of the committee, my name is Glenn Stonebrink. I'm with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. I bring before you today a budget note from the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. It's supported by the Oregon State Grange and the Oregon Women for Agriculture, as well as a number of county governments. And basically the note would say, and you could of course put it in your own words, but no funds may be spent on wolves, wolf plans, or rules pertaining to wolves. And
Glenn, are you talking about license fee funds or general funds? You wouldn't object.
No funds.
So you don't want, if we can fund that with federal dollars, you wouldn't want that funded with federal dollars?
That's correct. And I want to give you just a little background to the rationale of this, that the commission passed a plan. They approved a plan, which I have here. It's 178 pages long, and rules, which I also have copies of here, in February of this year, even though there were 16 legislators who asked them to hold off, there's just been the new ruling by the Judge Jones, and of course the legislature's in session, and they didn't. They went ahead and passed that. Now, I'm not here to talk about the merits of House Bill 3478, but it is a bill that I contend that is to validate what they've already passed. So they're asking the legislature to go along with what they want to do, not with what you want to do. And so, in a sense, dictating to the legislature how you must create laws to go along with their rules. Now, according to this plan, and I think there's been more money spent since that time, so I would have to estimate that there's been approximately $500,000 spent already on creation of the Wolf Plan. Now, I know they claim that 75% of this is federal money and 25% comes from general funds, the state general fund. And they expect to spend another $500,000 each year after this on this implementation of this plan. And that's according to what they say in the plan. Now, the federal money is interesting because in discussing legislation and this plan and what it says about these money, they call it state wildlife grant. But I asked where exactly, what federal category does that come from? And they said CARA. And I think I have this right, and it's the Conservation and Restoration Act that was passed in Congress, and they get royalties off some offshore oil funds, but with the intent that this money would go to the state fish and wildlife departments to enhance walleye. And I know the chief sponsor of this was Congressman Don Young from Alaska, and I know that he's you know, an avid hunter, and this was the intent of this. But if this money is now being spent on a wolf plan to enhance the population of a big predator that likes to eat big game and wildlife, and of course in our concern, we're both concerned with that and our livestock, then we wonder if this is actually the proper use of these funds. the wolf that is in question is one that was captured in Canada, comes from a foreign country, introduced into Idaho, and comes across the border into Oregon. Now, the Oregon Endangered Species Act says that it can't be an introduced species. And there's questions about the science of whether it's the same wolf or not, and we contend that it is and so on. But there's no question. I think even the department will come here and tell you that this is a wolf that was captured originally in Canada and brought into the other states. Yes?
I have to get you to have remarks to the budget as to the merits of the wolf plan.
Okay.
That will come up when we actually do the individual programs that they're going to have. If you could do that for us, please.
Okay. I would like to just address this one thing because it was brought up yesterday, if I could, and I'll skip the rest of this. Senator Nelson yesterday asked about trust, because we're talking about the wolf and whether the federal government manages it or the state government.
Nobody trusts the wolf.
Pardon me?
Nobody trusts the wolf.
I just want to make this clear, that it's not a question of that we have a choice between trust of one government or another. It is a federally listed species. It's their species. They drive the requirements that are there. So it isn't like we don't like have a choice of this. The only thing the state can do, Senator, is to be more restrictive. It's not they don't have a choice of being less restrictive. It's whether they can only be more restrictive. So I just wanted to kind of clear that up in this idea of trust, that if we do something with Oregon in this arena, that we're only going to be more restrictive, not less restrictive. And let's see. I guess anything else other... Well, the last statement. I guess the taxpayers and the public in general, I would say, should be outraged to think that money is being wasted on enhancing the population of a giant predator of wildlife and livestock. I would say that the sale of cattle and calves is number two in ag commodities, if you count nursery stock, and we do. Otherwise, we'd be number one. So the diminishing parts of predators eating our livestock hurts our rural economies as well as it hurts the state's economy in general. So I would think that the public should be outraged that we're spending this money on this predator. I would like to ask for this budget note to be placed there. To stop this, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
How about Joe Rohleder and Arnie Austin? Ann? Is it Ann? Looks like almost like Arnie on here. Excuse me.
Oh, I apologize for my poor arthritic hand.
Blame it on arthritis, Joe.
Too much fishing. Salt water.
Mr. Chairman, I really can't blame it on the nuns that taught me to ride. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Rohleder. I'm the Government Affairs Advisor for Oregon Aquaculture Association. With me today is Ann Reinstrom. She's a trout farmer from Clackamas, and she's the secretary of our association, treasurer of our association. And her ranch is called Clear Creek Trout Farm. Rainbow Ranch, yes, okay. I'll get it right sooner or later. We've submitted written testimony about two bills that we're very interested in that we hope we'll have a chance to talk about later during this process. However, since the issue has come up about hatcheries and about Diamond Lake, we'd like to say that we certainly believe that private aquaculture in Oregon can be a part of the solution to the problem at Diamond Lake. Private aquaculture has produced many of the large fish that have been stocked in Diamond Lake since 1999. It's our idea that we've had this program in place for the state to purchase private aquaculture products from our industry for restocking in the state since 1999. We do not feel that it's prudent to close any state hatcheries. But we do believe that the anglers of Oregon can get a better product and a quality product by getting part of their production from private aquaculture. Additionally, we work with the department now on transportation permits, on fish health issues, and on stocking permits. So we work with the department very closely. We think we provide good fish for the public to catch. We also provide a large number of fish for private folks to stock in their own ponds under permits from the department for people to catch by their children, by themselves, by whatever. So we're a growing industry in Oregon. We provide family wage jobs out in the rural area, and we look forward to continuing to working with the department on this budget. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Rohleder or Ann? Ann, you got
Representative Krieger and members of the committee. My name's Ann Reistrom, and I'm treasurer of both Clear Creek Rainbow Ranch and Oregon Aquaculture Association. We've been a family-owned fish farm that's been operating since 1973. We have one in Oregon City, one farm in Oregon City, and one in Estacada. Just in terms of your budget, private aquaculture and the state hatcheries all need good fish pathologists. That area of the budget, we believe, should be funded. We need to have a lot of decisions made with a science base, and that comes from fish pathologists. It's not from political views. It's not from political, you know, agendas and things like that, but the pathology department do have science-based decisions. The Youth Angling Enhancement Program has been part of the budget. It takes some money from a OWEB grant and some from Fish and Wildlife to purchase fish from private aquaculture to be stocked for the youth angling events, and this has been an excellent way to help support rural fish farms and also to market to the youth of Oregon so that you can keep the angling, you know, the license fees and the tackle fees up by bringing on the new kids and teaching them that they really like to go fishing too. And I guess that was the Oregon Wildlife
Heritage
Program. Okay, sorry about that. Get my funds mixed up. Anyway, but we do believe that that should be funded in the future, and it has been a good program. And we've worked closely with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to bring that to the kids. Also, in terms of using the trout hatchery budget and purchasing that from private fish hatcheries, that contract was supposed to go through 2006. We understand that it will not it will not be funded for the last year or so of the program. And we feel that to have a contract with a private entity and have the state renege on that contract, we feel that that is not in the best interest of Oregon. It doesn't look good. And these fish have been raised for the program, and they're at the farm. So it's not only the vendors not going to get their money for supplying the fish, but they've gone to the expense of having the fish already and raising the fish for the state. And now what are they going to do with the fish? And we feel that since the salmon fishery is down, Director Ball said that when salmon fishery goes down, they look to trout fishing. So we urge you, when the salmon fishery is down, to look at bringing on trout fishing and using that to supplement so we still have angling fees and tackle fees. And I urge you to support revenue in the state of Oregon by supporting private aquaculture.
Reverend Shoffer.
Thank you. You're right close to home, I see. How many fish trout farms are there in Oregon?
I believe on the official printed list, there are 34 licensed farms, of which 30, once you cut out the duplicates, you have about 30.
Do you have opportunities for bringing kids out and fishing out there, or is it just a commercial operation?
Right. We supply people like that. We'd recommend Horning's Hideout and Indian Springs Trout Farm. One other thing is in the four western states, Washington, Idaho, Oregon, and California, of the gross sales from private aquaculture, Oregon is only 1.2% of that. And we feel that it's an underutilized, that we've got a lot of area for growth, we've got a lot of potential, and we could bring a lot of revenue to Oregon if we were promoted, you know, if we were given the ability to enhance our businesses and grow in that area.
Senator Bates?
And you have a written contract with the state on production of these fish through 2006?
We did not. It's Desert Springs, one of our members.
I'm sorry, let me rephrase that then. Does Desert Springs have a written contract with through 2006 with the state of Oregon?
I believe they do.
And is there a clause that allows the state to step out from it or something? I mean, how can they not fulfill the contract?
I don't believe so.
What makes you think that they're not going to have their contract fulfilled?
It's been pulled out of the budget. It's not funded. Is that?
Well,
that's a bit of a problem.
We'll take a look at this. I mean, yeah, it's like we have a legal obligation to fulfill our contract.
We talked about the hatchery program and aquaculture when the chair was here. And there's some unanswered questions, and I think our staff is writing down some notes, and we'll get the right answers back for everybody before we're done with this.
Great.
Any further questions?
Well, Mr. Chair, if a contract is in place, it would seem to me, and it's
we fulfill the contract.
That's more than likely what we're going to find out.
It would seem to me that if it wasn't fulfilled, there would be some litigation. And what's that going to cost the state of Oregon? Okay.
We'll get those answers, and we'll get the answers back when we do the last part of the budget. We're going to those programs, so we know what we're dealing with. And then Mr. Ball has heard the questions and statements, and he can confirm for us what the situation is. Any further questions? Okay, thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
And thank you very much.
Doug Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Doug Myers, and I am here representing Water Watch of Oregon, Trout Unlimited, the Oregon chapter of Trout Unlimited, the Native Fish Society, the Oregon Water Trust, American Rivers, and Oregon Trout. The first three are clients of mine. We're urging the committee to restore funding for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife in-stream water rights technical expert position in this coming budget. The position provides essential and critical services to the state and is a key position in the effort to restore and maintain salmon and other fisheries across Oregon, and it should be maintained. In-stream water rights are a critical component of healthy rivers in Oregon, The in-stream flow analysis provided through this one position is an important aspect of many processes such as dam relicensing, analyzing the impacts of hydro operations on our rivers and streams, and processes involving a technical foundation for ODF&W's in-stream water rights. ODF&W has approximately 1,400 in-stream water rights, including approximately 8 pending applications that have been protested and must be defended or resolved. The position ensures statewide consistency in the application of in-stream flow policies and technical applications of flow needs of fish and wildlife resources while representing the state on in-stream flow, technical issues with other state and federal agencies, public interest groups, industry, and the public. There is no other source of expertise at the state level to replace this crucial and essential services and expertise. I should tell you two things. The governor recommended this position be eliminated. Mr. Carey and Mr. Myron are now advocating for its restoration. And secondly, you'll find it in the Fish Division, the position, and it says reduce library services for archival and historic information, diminishing response to water right and flow issues, which is more than a bit misleading to anybody who might want to really figure it out. It really is a position of in-stream water rights coordination, and we'd like to see it restored. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Any comments, questions, Mr. Myers? Thank you very much, Doug.
I'm in the same line several
times. Sandy Flicker.
This position is really good.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sandy Flicker, and I'm here today representing the Oregon Rural Electric Cooperative Association. And with me is Mark Nelson, who is representing the industrial customers of Northwest Utilities.
Excuse me, Mark. You are Mark down there with us.
I thought I did that.
Oh, he's doing it all the time.
Yeah, does that surprise you? Thank you for the opportunity to come today and make some comments about the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife budget. First of all, let me let you know that we're not here in support or in opposition to the budget, and we actually would like to take this opportunity to thank Mr. Ball and his staff for working with us to provide us information on the BPA funding that they received. I know he provided us information at our request, and he provided you information as well. So I wanted to make sure he understands how much we appreciate that. We would, however, like to make some comments about the use of that money. Currently, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is asking for authorization for about $22 million for the next biennium that basically comes from BPA ratepayers. Over $400 million has been spent in Oregon from 1978 to 2001. For fish and wildlife programs that has been funded by BPA ratepayers. So there's been a considerable amount of money that has come in support of the ODF&W budget for many, many years now. We do have some concerns about the use of that money, and I wanted to share with you a letter that was received. A letter that was received by the governor from the U.S. Department of Commerce. And I have highlighted on the second page, I believe it is, a concern that we have shared with the Department of Commerce, and that is we have been concerned about how those BPA rate dollars have been spent, what we have accomplished with those, what the future goals are, and we continue to work with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, but I don't think we have received the answer to all of our questions yet. So there obviously has been a concern expressed by the U.S. Department of Commerce about those same funds. We're talking about the same funds here and the use of those funds. So I know that they are probably working with ODF&W on getting some answers to their questions as well. one of the reasons that I wanted to make sure you understood that we've even raised this issue, and that is mostly because about 20 to 25% of BPA ratepayers' electricity bills goes to fish recovery programs. That's a considerable amount of a person's bill every single month. And it was interesting to note that Mr. Ball was mentioning to you that people who hunt and fish pay for the ODF&W programs. But I want to make sure you understand that the hydro system, which provides the power to BPA customers, not only benefits BPA customers who use that power, but in addition benefits the nature of something called the residential exchange goes to all the other investor-owned utility customers in the state. $58.1 million goes to PGE customers. $64.2 million goes to Pacific Core customers. And $574,000 goes to Idaho Power customers. Those benefits are paid for by BPA customers. And it is in recognition by federal law that those benefits of that federal system need to be shared by everyone. So we pay that residential exchange for them. But what I want to make sure you understand is they don't pay for those fish costs. We do. They do receive benefits from the hydro system, but we pay for the fish recovery costs in our rates. So there's a little bit of a disjointed policy, and it's not your problem, and it's not anything you created. It's an issue that's not going to be resolved here or maybe ever, but I wanted to make sure you understood why we are so concerned about how that money is being spent, because it's money that we bear the full responsibility for. We would like to continue to work with the Department of Fish and Wildlife in developing their future grant applications for programs that directly mitigate the impact of the hydro system, because we do want to understand what those goals are and what they expect to accomplish with that money. They've received money since 1982. Some of those programs have been ongoing since 1982, and we'd like the opportunity to work with them and make sure that that is the best use of those funds in terms of fulfilling our responsibility for mitigation of the Columbia River salmon programs. But the other reason we're here today, and probably more important in terms of asking something of you, and that is we too would like you to consider a budget note. The major concern that we have today, not only, frankly, is with the ODF&W budget, but it's with the Department of Environmental Quality, Department of Energy, Ag, Forestry, and the Watershed Enhancement Board budgets. According to information from the Attorney General, which we're passing out today, and I know you've seen this from me before, over $100,000 and climbing has been spent to litigate over Columbia River fish issues. This money comes from agency budgets after the legislature has approved those budgets. So after you go home, the governor asks agencies for money out of their budgets to provide to the Attorney General for litigation that he chooses to get involved in on behalf of Oregon. The legislature, therefore, has no opportunity to engage in that policy decision. That money is spent after, as I've said, you have approved those budgets. And as far as I know, at this point in time, there is no accounting to you for that money that has been spent. This money, we're very well aware of the money coming out of the ODF&W budget, is not BPA ratepayer money. I understand that very clearly. However, it's somebody's money. It's either taxpayer money or it's the money coming from people that pay the fees to the department. But as I have testified to you in the past on the Department of Energy budget, the portion that you see in there that comes from the Department of Energy does come out of utility customers' pockets. They pay, utilities are expected to pay an energy supplier assessment fund to the Office of Energy, and since we're cost-based utilities, that money is paid directly from our customers, and that is money that has been used for litigation basically against BPA ratepayers. So there is a pocket of money that very directly has been used with our best interests not in mind. We would like this committee to consider a budget note that would require the Attorney General to report to either the Emergency Board or the Ways and Means Committee on the amount and source of agency funds used for litigation initiated by the Governor. This is a full exposure budget note. You as legislators should be aware of how state funds outside of your approval are being spent when these funds come directly from Oregonians. I know a goal of this 2005 Ways and Means Committee is accountability. We're asking for nothing more than accountability for taxpayer, fee payer, and rate payer dollars. By establishing a reporting process, both legislators and other stakeholders will no longer be in the dark. Shedding sunlight on the use of these funds is the first step in getting ahead of the policy decisions being made by the leadership of Oregon instead of being left out of that decision-making process completely. We would very much appreciate your consideration of a budget note addressing this important budget policy issue. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. I don't want to take a lot of time again because of my ignorance, but I thought I heard you say that 25% of the rate paid by Bonneville customers goes to fish mitigation. I may not have heard that correctly.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, that's true.
What kind of money does that generate?
$600 million a year. And now, next year, upwards of $700 million a year.
Where exactly does that money go?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Well, there's a list a mile long. Mr. Chair and Senator Bates, I would be glad to provide you with as much information as I have. What we've been referring to today are the Oregon grants. That money is distributed back. Some of that money is distributed back to the states and to tribes for fish programs. And Oregon happens to be the recipient of 42% of that state grant money.
We won't take everybody's time right now. We'll talk about
it. We're getting off of the agency's budget. Stick to the agency's budget. And if there's outside questions on policy, that's a separate issue. Get those questions if you have them from the folks and then to the director. So
move on.
So that we can do that. We have, I think, six people left. We're going to have to watch our time a little bit. There's three here and three on another sign-up sheet. Mark?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, representing Industrial Customers, Northwest Utilities. I'll be very short. We've been working with Mr. Ball, and he has been very cooperative in trying to look at where these dollars are going. Industrial Customers, Northwest Utilities, Boeing, Weyerhaeuser, Intel, Hewlett Packard, a number of organizations, we represent them on electrical issues. These dollars are our dollars, just as Sandy has indicated, and a substantial amount of dollars per year are going into fish mitigation. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has an integral role in that process. And we believe, and I think Mr. Ball is a willing partner in this, is that we need to better understand so we can go back to our customers, to our clients, and say, this is how the money is being spent. You have an ability to influence this process as to whether these grants are being spent on issues that truly do mitigate the fish issues in the Columbia River. So this has been our thrust throughout this session. It's going to continue beyond this budget, and Mr. Ball has given every indication that we can continue this dialogue. So we want to be involved, and I must say we haven't been involved, and that's been more our fault than anybody else's. So,
yeah, I think this is a bigger policy issue than just this budget note. I don't want an individual budget note on every budget. This is a big policy issue I think needs to be addressed across the government, state government. And I'm interested in doing that. But I don't want individual budget notes on every little budget. I don't think that's really going to get us where we want to go. But I think it's a policy issue.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Phil Donovan.
Good afternoon. Chair Krieger, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Phil Donovan. I work on behalf of the Association of Northwest Steelheaders, the Oregon Guides and Packers Association, and the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry. Last session, this committee had to get a bigger room for a public hearing on the Department of Fish and Wildlife's budget because of the fee increase that had been proposed. I don't want today's lack of turnout to be interpreted as a lack of interest. In fact, a lot of folks are pretty fired up about fishery issues right now, as you've heard from other interest groups. But in today's Salem Statesman Journal, there's an Associated Press article that actually, if I understand correctly, started the New York Times talking about how the sport fishing industry has been hurt by the lack of fish runs. And they document one of our fishing guides who had returned $10,000 in deposits from clients as far away as Colorado, California, and state of Washington. Now, we support the operations of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. They've got tremendous staff, and they have a really tough job, and they do it out in the field under trying circumstances and without enough resources. And we know, as an industry, as outfitters, and just as recreational fishermen, that their success is also our success. And that's why last session we advocated for the largest license increase in the history of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. The sport fishing industry represents G.I. Joe's, Fishermen's Marine and Outdoors, mom and pop bait shots up and down the coast. They're selling these licenses to the public, and we know that citizens are experiencing sticker shock. An annual resident license and salmon tag now costs $49.25. That may not be a lot to the very motivated fishing angler, but it is an expensive fee to the weekend warrior. As such, we are opposed to legislative proposals that remove the ending balance from the department's budget. These dollars were built up in the agency because of that last fee increase, and taking the ending balance is short-sighted, because what that's going to necessitate is more cries for more fee increases. Allow me to suggest, though, that a better route and for a stable financial future is that we reverse the trend in declining fishing licenses and hunting license sales. That's why the sport fishing industry brought forward legislation to give the Fish and Wildlife Commission more latitude in their decision-making process and to try and bring about sustainable fisheries, and rather than just focusing on how we're dividing the existing allocation pie. We'd like to get a Fish and Wildlife Commission that creates stable, reliable sport fishing seasons. This will have the dual benefit of boosting the agency's bottom line and helping economies, local economies around the state. It should also be noted that the Oregon outdoor industry contributes approximately $40 million to the state's general fund. And yet, in the agency where we get most of our bang for the buck back, we get about $10 million. This is an inequity that we've endured for many years while we're at the same time providing many services to the general public. So with that, I'll close. We appreciate the consideration that this committee is giving to a very important state agency budget, and I thank you for your time.
Any questions? Thank you, Phil.
Thank you.
Mr. Marquis. See, when you're older, Jim, we call you Mr. When you're young, we call you Phil.
Thanks a lot. Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, after 30 years in the building, I commented to my wife the other day that I was really tired of some of the young staff people calling me Mr. Marquis. I wish they'd cut it out. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Where's Matt?
Nice to see you too, representing. I'm Jim Marquis. I'm here to representing the a group called Salmon for All, and they are the Lower Columbia River commercial fishermen, and many of the seafood processors that are also represented by Mr. Moore that spoke earlier. I'm here. I want to just address a couple of things. First of all, I want to say that I admire the folks at the department and respect very much the balancing act that they have to endure on a day-to-day basis. You've heard from a lot of different people today, and the sports guys never think they get treated fairly, and the commercial guys don't think they get treated fairly, and the power companies think that these guys worry about fish too much, and it is a huge task to find the balance that works for everybody, and I just want to say that I think they do an excellent job. I served on their external budget advisory committee and learned more about their budget than I wanted to know, and I think that the agency generally has, and Director Ball in particular, has brought a great deal of fiscal responsibility to this agency, and that fiscal responsibility continues under his guidance. I want to make a pitch for a couple of things. First of all, the governor's budget cut $246,704 appropriation, general fund appropriation, to the Clatsop County Economic Development Corporation. This is a very unique program down there that I am really, really high on. I just think it is one of the neatest public-private partnerships that I've ever seen. I've only had this client for a year, but I got an opportunity to go down there and look at this thing. And what these folks have done, I mean, you always have this competition for Columbia River fish, and you always have to worry about, you know, how many of the wild stock gets back to Idaho and all that kind of stuff. Well, what these guys did was to create a fishery in Young's Bay, which is off the main stem Columbia, fed by Lewis and Clark. And it is a hatchery program that this year will release 1.7 million spring Chinook smolts, 1.3 million coho smolts, 1 million fall Chinook, and then up the river at Kathlamet Bay, they're going to release 200,000 coho additionally this year. Now, these fish, percentage of these fish come back. Our guys, the commercial fishermen, fish in Young's Bay for those fish, and they're off the main stem Columbia, not impacting those fish that the folks in Senator Nelson's district worry so much about. So this is a tremendous project, and you get a lot of bang for your buck. And it's not just general fund money that goes into this program, but there are also license fees that go in, BPA money, and private contributions and assessments from commercial fishermen and processors in the area. And it's become an integral part of the North Coast economy, and it's just very, very important. Both versions of the co-chair's budget, I believe, that I saw, recommended restoring this money, and we would urge the subcommittee to restore this money. It's just a tremendous asset down there. In addition to the commercial fishing that goes on for these fish, the fall Chinook and the fall coho enhance the famous Buoy 10 fishery, and I'm told as many as 25% to 28% of the returning Young's Bay fish are actually caught by Buoy 10 sport fishing folks. So it's a tremendous benefit for Phil's folks and my folks both, and additionally, I think for the power folks, it gets our guys off the main stem for part of their fishery. So I'd urge you to restore that money. With respect to another issue, and that was Mr. Moore's comments relative to the commercial fishing fund, it is true that the department is projecting, I believe, a $1.6 million ending balance in that fund. But I would ask you to approach this with a little caution, and I'm not here to object to the use of the money for what Mr. Moore suggested, but I believe that you need to look at this very closely. That the ending balance in that fund has been somewhat volatile. It's up and down. Right now, it's up. It's up primarily because of 2 years of hugely successful crab fishery, and we're due for a crash, and so that fund balance may or may not be there in the future. And I think there are also some competing interests out there in terms of what that money might be used for, and I would just say that we might want to look after the session at convening a group of folks to sit around a table, and if there is a surplus, figure out the best use for the money, and without saying, hey, here's a project, let's just spend the money. So a little caution in that area is all I would ask. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We still have four people remaining. We got about 12 minutes, so give yourself three or four if you can. Summarize, please. Rod Brobeck, please.
My name is Rod Brobeck. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Wildlife Heritage Foundation, and I'll be really quick. I'm here to talk about Diamond Lake, but first, there's been three projects mentioned in testimony today that I'd like to talk about real quick. It's the kids' fishing program, where the legislature put $50,000 up to the department for matching money. They came to us, and we matched that money for 2 years of fishing. Last year, there's 2,000 kids took part of that program. Another program is this quail transplant they were talking about. Foundation paid for radio tags for those quail. I don't know how you put a radio tag on a quail, but somehow they do that.
Somebody did it, huh?
Yeah. And another one that we started in 1994 was the Western Oregon Salmon Habitat Program. We did that for about 6 years, and up to the point where we had 8 biologists on the department that we were paying for to do that work. Then the department has taken that program over since then. But what I'm really here to talk about is the partnerships that we have with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, one of which is we're looking at Diamond Lake, the restoration of Diamond Lake, and there's already been quite a bit of talk about that. One thing that was not mentioned is how is this going to get paid for. And the budget I have here calls for $2.5 million over the next 2 years to pay for that project. And we've been asked, the foundation has been asked to raise $1.4 million toward that project. And in this original budget that I had here, or the kind of concept, there was $375,000 was going to be asked by the legislature or the state of Oregon to pay towards that program. And we're about ready to, we're going to make a decision probably in the next week or two if we're going to go ahead with this fundraising for the Diamond Lake. We've already put $32,000 into these studies to go into this for the fundraising. We're ready to jump on it. But one of the questions that people always ask us is, what is the state doing for this? Why isn't the state funding this? What are they doing? And as I understand it, this $375 the department has asked to go toward Diamond Lake has been pulled from the budget. And that would mean that our foundation would have to raise about $1.8 million for Diamond Lake, which is about 70% of the project itself. And I don't know if we can do that. Especially if the state pulls out, it looks like it's a bad deal. The state's not too interested in restoring Diamond Lake.
Mr. Sieber, is that in the one budget?
Mr. Chairman of the committee, I believe that there is some funding for Diamond Lake in the House budget version.
I've heard it was pulled from the governor's budget.
It is.
Yeah. Well, I would urge that if we can get that back in there.
We're going to be concerned with the two co-chairs' budget. The governor's budget's kind of...
We'll work our budgets out first.
Oh, okay. It's a sort of a starting point.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I'm concerned because it's going to be tough to raise $1.4 million.
We'll take care of that.
You'll take care of that?
Yep.
Okay, well, then we'll do what we
not
can.
Not the $1.4 million.
Oh, okay.
Careful, Mr. Chair.
Well, if you can get us $375,000, it would be a big step and make it a lot easier for us to sell the program. So,
all right.
If you got any questions, that's
any
all.
Any questions? Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Ray Wilkerson.
He's
already
short, too.
Now, you watch this man. He is always short and to the point.
I'll try to live up to that reputation.
What a segue.
Mr. Chairman. Ray Wilkerson, Oregon Forest Industries Council. I will be quick. I just want to support the budget and comment on one recent activity the department's been engaged with that I think is worthy of your awareness, at least from our perspective. So I think you know the forest industry has been very much involved with salmon issues for a long time, the Oregon Salmon Plan and other related issues. These are fish that basically begin their life and end their life on land that we're responsible for the habitat of, and so we have a great interest in their well-being. What I wanted to comment particularly on is the Department of Fish and Wildlife's viability assessment for coastal coho salmon, which I think this week is going to go to the federal government and will help help them make some decisions related to the Endangered Species Act. And following their work on this, I was and others were very impressed with the hard work and professionalism of the ODF&W staff in putting this thing together. The usual stereotype of public employees, unfortunately, would be 180 degrees reversed if people could have observed the hard work that went into this effort by the fish division staff. They literally worked nights and weekends to put this thing together. They had to be done right. They know it's going to be subject to intense scrutiny by a lot of different people. It had to be credible, had to be professional. They did what needed to be done. They got a long ways to go. The federal government, interest groups, probably federal judges are going to have to look at this thing and pass judgment on it before it's all done. But ODF&W has done their part, and they need to be commended for it. And finally, I'd like to say, in my opinion, I think a lot of that credit goes to Director Ball. I think he has a unique ability to motivate and inspire people to kind of go the extra mile and be successful, and I think he deserves to be acknowledged for that. So thank you very much.
Questions? Thank you very much, Ray. Rod Harder.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rod Harder, representative for NRA and our 63,000 members in Oregon. I'm here today to support the budget, and I'll be very brief. Representative Krupp and I know very well how many times we have had to buy the game detail, and so I am glad to see that funded, and that would be our number one priority, is to keep that fully funded. Next to that, the field biologists need to be fully funded also, and our members have supported that. They supported that in testimony for our fee increases last session and continue to do so. Our Access and Habitat Board currently is in the middle of a project identifying landlocked public lands that we're trying to open up for access to the public, the hunting public, and we would like to see that particular program go forward with a great deal of enthusiasm. Continual reduction in the general funds is a grave concern to us, and I was glad that Senator Bates brought up that part about the non-consumptive users, because over the years of my former life, when I had more clients than I had now, we always tried to get more general funds to cover the cost of those non-consumptive users, and I still feel like that should go forward. License and tag fee are more and more taking up the cost of those programs that should be funded in another method. I would agree with Phil Donovan and some other words in being cautious about depleting the ending balance, peeling off the general funds as has happened over the last several years, and depleting the general ending balance, I think, is inviting need to have another fee increase. And frankly, our guys are not ready for that yet. I would answer any questions if anyone had some. Thank you.
I might make comment, Mr. Chair. I'm not ready to vote for another fee increase for a long time. So I would agree with Rod.
It would be depend for me whether or not he can give me another 9 points. Well,
for the record.
No, I think we have to be very careful of that. It's,
I agree.
The outdoor user recreation has stepped up pretty good last time. Tune of about $10 million, so they need to be given consideration.
Well,
for the shop.
Mr. Chair, I mean, we're seeing declining fishers and hunters, so we're going to add on the fee to discourage people from buying a license. It just doesn't add up.
There's a point of diminishing returns on it.
Agreed.
Okay, we have two more people. Is it Anita Winkler and Larry Trocey?
And Mr. Chair and members of the committee, in the interest of full disclosure, Larry's one of my constituents, and it's good to see you, Larry. I'll be kind.
We will be kind.
May I ask if that'll pass to me as well, since I'm sharing a table?
Absolutely.
I'm Anita Winkler. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Water Resources Congress, and I'm here today to express our members' concern about a position that's being cut, or is proposed to be cut in the governor's budget. It's a fish screen engineer position, and our concern about that comes from our members, our irrigation district members' long involvement in screening irrigation diversions to keep the fish out of the canals and keep the fish healthy. Several years ago, we, along with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, worked very hard at the federal level to get a program in place called the Fisheries Restoration, I'm going to blow it, Irrigation Mitigation Act of 2000. We know it as FREMA. You can see why. That program could bring a very large amount of money to the three Northwest states, or the fourth Northwest states. It hasn't borne quite as much fruit as we might have hoped, but over the years that it's been funded, it's brought anywhere from $600,000 to well over $1 million of federal money to irrigation diversions, not just irrigation districts, but any kind of diversion for irrigation. And it has been matched typically by 75% non-federal money. So you do the math, and pretty quickly we're putting some major money into fish screens. To give you an order of magnitude of what that means, these fish screen projects range anywhere from $200,000 to the kind of the gold-plated behemoth in Klamath, where it was a $16 million fish screen. These are not small projects. I want to give you one quick story about why we think this position is really important, and it's a fairly recent event. One of our members had their flume collapse as a result of a small earthquake up on Mount Hood last year. At that point, they had to change the point of diversion of their water, or they couldn't deliver water to their orchardists right in the middle of the irrigation season. It was not a good time to tell orchardists they couldn't get water. Every agency in the state worked with that district. I have to say that was another instance where public agencies have gotten a bad rap because they came forward in a way that was far beyond our expectations. But this engineer at ODF&W was absolutely instrumental in that district being able to continue to deliver water. Without his help, we don't know if the district could have delivered water, or they would have been diverting water without a fish screen and would have been in all sorts of problems over ESA take, and you can only imagine the fines and the litigation that would have gone on. I've given you written testimony. I'm not going to go through it in detail because I think you'd much rather hear from Larry Trosi. Larry is the manager of the Santa Ana Water Control District. He's the chair of my legislative committee. He serves on my board of directors. And he's on the Fish Passage Task Force for the department. He wears many other hats, but that's kind of enough for right now. It's a big burden for him to carry that many. But I do want to point out to you that he's here defending part of the ODF&W budget, even though the department is currently suing him. That might give you a good idea of how important we think this position is.
Well, thank you, Anita. But Representative Gregor, Chair, and members of the committee, for the record, Larry Trosi. I'm the manager of the Santa Ana Water Control District, just east of Salem in Staten, Oregon. And I did want to come talk about the support for this particular position. I am also a member of the Fish Screen Task Force, Fish Passage Task Force. And it was brought to our attention that this particular position was going to be cut. I've had the opportunity to work with this engineer with that position through a couple of projects that we've done, both very large projects. And in the long run, to really cut to the chase, they saved us a lot of money, saved a lot of engineering costs. We basically didn't have to reinvent the wheel, even though we had kind of a little bit different design that had been done in other areas of the country. It still was something similar that had been done in Oregon, so we were able to basically spent a lot less with our current engineering firm just because of the expertise that was there with this particular position and within ODF&W. I've also done some work with the city of Salem on a fish ladder on the North Santa Ana River that this position's been involved in, and I know it's been very helpful to the city as well to us in that position. So Just wanted to take the opportunity to come in today and try and encourage you to try and find room to save this position.
Any other questions? Thank you. Is there anyone who hasn't signed up that wants to testify?
If you have 1 minute.
We'll give you a minute.
That's all I need. Okay. I'm already short.
My name is Dennis Ritchie. I'm executive director of Oregon Anglers, and I hadn't anticipated testifying at all today, but I felt that I just wanted to say that I've worked with the department in a lot of areas in the last 2 years. I am on the coho recovery team as the sports fishing representative. I'm on the ocean advisory policy team, and also was on the committee or worked with the committee that wrote the Native Fish Conservation Plan, among many other things. And the department has been moving in a direction that is more and more involved with the public, more and more transparent as far as budget items and direction. And again, Director Ball is directly responsible for that. We feel that some of the things that were mentioned are really, really important. For example, the STEP programs, the STEP volunteer hatcheries. A number of the STEP hatcheries belong to us as affiliates. And if you got a chance to go down to in southern Oregon to some of those STEP hatcheries or to the one at Tillamook, you'd be really, really impressed with the products they put out. And one of the things that was just mentioned about the fish screening position, I feel that that's very, very important in the long run. I think reducing that department will be a big ding to our effort in trying to restore native fish and those fish runs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Siebert, we're finished, aren't we?
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, that is the last meeting, currently scheduled meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources.
Okay. Senators, we do actually look forward to getting back with you.
I feel exactly the same way. Hopefully it'll be Monday.
Hey, wouldn't that be wonderful? I really believe
it will be, but it would be great for sitting here a week from now back together.
Okay, I guess we're adjourned. Thank you.